Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has the theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests will discuss an interesting topic, no two of which are alike. My first guest is an Agatha Christie aficionado. He hit the jackpot when he discovered Agatha Christie's lost notebooks. We'll discuss 50 years of mysteries by the world's most popular writer from his book, Agatha Christie's Secret Notebooks. My second guest is a PhD that proselytizes the end of employment in the United States and what it means for individuals. We'll discuss his latest book, Work's New Age. My third guest specializes in women's histories. She explores a unique aspect of history, the heroic journey of Australia's convict women. We'll discuss her latest book, The Tin Ticket. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. John Curran is a lifelong Agatha Christie fan. He lives in Dublin, Ireland. Agatha Christie was the world's most popular author by the time she died in 1976 at the age of 85. She had sold more than 2 billion copies of her books worldwide in more than 100 different countries. Christie had achieved the impossible, more than one book every year since the 1920s, and every book a bestseller. For many years, John edited the official Agatha Christie newsletter and acted as the consultant to the National Trust during the restoration of Greenway House, which was Dame Agatha Christie's home in Devon. John is also working with Agatha Christie's grandson, Michael Pritchett, to establish the Agatha Christie Archives. He's currently writing a doctoral thesis on Agatha Christie at Trinity College in Dublin and joining us from Dublin. How are you today, or this evening, John? How are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for being our subject matter expert on this very fun topic. So let's start with the beginning. Tell us, how did you discover the secret notebooks of Agatha Christie?
Well, in 2004, I traveled to Calgary in Canada to see a hitherto unperformed Agatha Christie play, and while I was there, I met her grandson, her only grandchild, and he invited me later on to visit Greenway House, because at that stage they were preparing to hand it over to the state to have it renovated, and it's now open to the public. So a few months later, Matthew and myself travelled down to Greenway, and he brought me around the house, and at a room at the top of the stairs was a small, narrow room, and it was the history of Agatha Christie's literary life, all of her letters, typescripts, first editions, paperbacks, film posters, theatre programmes, contracts, and a brown cardboard box at the bottom of a cupboard with 73 notebooks.
Wow.
The notebooks of Agatha Christie.
Now, did Matthew Pritchett know what he was sitting on? Did he know the value of these historical documents?
Well, Matthew, as I said, Agatha Christie was his grandmother, and as far as Matthew was concerned, for a lot of his life, she was just Granny. I'm not saying he took her for granted, but she was just part of his family from the time he was a small boy, and they had a very close relationship. So he has been looking after the Agatha Christie estate for a long time. So he did know that these papers are very valuable in the sense that they're irreplaceable and unique. But he had never examined the notebooks in any great detail. And while they have been referred to in the authorized biographies, my book was the first to examine them in detail and compare them to the published books that we all know and love.
Well, that brings up the bigger question, John, which is, how did you know that there was a story in all of these notebooks that needed to be told?
Well, when I saw them first and read them and stayed up all night reading them, it was just purely as a fan, because I was fascinated, I still am fascinated by the work of Agatha Christie, and this was a glimpse into the creative process. So it wasn't until a while later that I suddenly realised that there was a story here to be told, because Agatha Christie had and still has millions of fans in every corner of the globe. And I thought, well, if Matthew is willing to share this with the rest of her fans, I'm more than happy to write a book analysing them, which I duly did. And then halfway through the first book, I realised there was so much information that it wouldn't fit between the covers of just one book, hence the second book, which has just been published in the US.
I see. My guest is John Curran. He's the author of the Agatha Christie Secret Notebooks, 50 Years of Mysteries in the Making. And John, it should be told that Agatha Christie kept her notes in just ordinary school notebooks. And
yeah,
everything she did was longhand. So my first question is, how difficult was it to read and decipher Agatha Christie's handwriting?
It was very difficult. And oddly, I would have thought that all of us, as we age, our handwriting deteriorates, but actually Agatha Christie's improved. At the early stages of her creative life, which is roughly the 20s, 30s, 40s, the handwriting was very, very difficult. It improved thereafter, and the notebooks, which date from later in her life, are legible by anybody. But not only were they very difficult to read, but also they were completely and utterly chaotic, because she was very disorganized, which is another oddity considering how well organized her books are. But notes for one book could be scattered through 12 notebooks.
Wow. I mean, but then it makes it very difficult for you to trace out the ambiguity and follow the trail down the rabbit hole.
Well, the comparison I made was, when I had transcribed all of the notebooks just as they stood, page for page, then it was like an enormous jigsaw to put together all the references to a murders announced, or all the references to the ABC murders, because, as I said, they could be scattered over a dozen notebooks, and there might only be one line on one page that referred to a particular book. Because I imagine that what she did was, she carried a notebook with her. She maybe had a notebook beside her bedside locker, maybe in the dining room when she was having her meals. And when she got an idea, she just opened the first blank page and wrote down her idea, and then went on with whatever she was doing. And then sometime later, maybe, but it could be a few years later, she would go back and work that idea up into a new story. But it wasn't a case of a notebook for this book and a notebook for that book. It was just chaos.
And you've made some sense out of the chaos. My guest is John Curran. John, let me ask you this. What is the appeal of Agatha Christie's novels throughout the world, in your opinion?
I think she achieved a combination of factors that no one else has managed so far to replicate, which is, first of all, she told a very, very clever story in relatively straightforward, simple language. It doesn't depend on your level of education to appreciate an Agatha Christie. You could, like my nephew who's 12, who loves Agatha Christie, or I'm doing a PhD on Agatha Christie. And then, of course, the other factor that we tend to forget is that she was enormously prolific. You can read a different Agatha Christie novel every month for 7 years. Now, that's quite a record in any field of literature.
Well,
but combine that with the fact that these stories are accessible to virtually anybody, and that they're very, very clever, no one else has managed to replicate those set of circumstances. And I think that's the appeal. Or, as I sometimes say, if I knew exactly what the appeal was, I wouldn't be writing books about it. I would be doing it.
Very sound advice, John. Very sound indeed. Well, it should be noted that since her death, she sold another 2 billion books worldwide. So total, since she began writing in the 1920s, she sold over 4 billion books. And the amazing thing to me is that every one of the books was a bestseller. No other author in the history of humankind has been able to do that as well.
And the normal process is, with a popular writer, a writer of popular fiction, when they die, they tend to disappear from the bookshelves. But in fact, the opposite has happened with Agatha Christie, and she's probably even more popular now than she was during her lifetime.
Oh, that's amazing. John Curran is my guest. Agatha Christie's Secret Notebooks is his book. So, John, give us some insight into Agatha Christie's two most famous literary characters, Hercule Poirot and Miss Jane Marple. What did you learn in the Secret Notebooks that was perhaps unknown before this?
Well, I learned little nuggets of information, like, for instance, that originally she intended Miss Marple to solve Death on the Nile and not Hercule Poirot.
Really?
Yes. She has the early sketches for Death on the Nile, as Miss Marple mentioned, not just once but twice in the list of characters. Now, why she changed her mind, we'll never know. I speculate about it in the book. And then in the new book, I have an essay that she wrote for the UK newspaper serialisation of her 1938 novel, Appointment with Death, in which she talks about the creation of the character Hercule Poirot and what she likes about him and what she doesn't like about him. And in fact, she grew to dislike him because, of course, like a lot of people who create characters, if they knew when they started what they were to know when they finished, they would do things differently. So she made him, for instance, a retired member of the Belgian police force in 1920, so that by the time he died in 1975, he was at least 120. And she made him Belgian, which meant that he had to keep saying phrases in French. And he also, she gave him this overweening vanity about his both his mental abilities and his wonderful moustaches. So probably if she had known then she'd be writing about him for the next 50 years, she might have changed some of those things. She was actually much more fond of Miss Marple. And it's notable that as Agatha Christie herself aged, she wrote more books about Miss Marple because they were beginning to be the same age. Miss Marple, of course, only appears in a dozen books, where Hercule Poirot appears in four times that, because Hercule Poirot was the one that her publishers wanted her to write about a lot. And, of course, for the last 20 years, we've had the wonderful TV series as well.
Yes, it has, and it is a wonderful series. John, now there, in the books, in the notebooks, there are two new stories that were included in the notebooks from the 1930s.
Yes.
Talk to us about that, because these are heretofore unknown stories.
Yes. One of them, the incident of the dog's ball, I found in amongst her papers, because when I was working with the National Trust, I was moving everything because the house had to be emptied to be renovated. And I found this, and when I read it, I realised it had very strong similarities to her 1937 novel, Dumb Witness. But the interesting thing about the short story was that it was a completely different solution and a completely different murderer to the novel. So the family had known about this story, but they felt that because of its similarity, it wasn't worth publishing. But I argued that the very fact that it was so similar and yet different in the important aspect of the denouement, that I felt that deserved publication to compare and contrast. The second one, The Capture of Cerberus, has a much more interesting history, because I had to do quite a lot of research to find out about this. In amongst her manuscripts was the manuscript of The Labours of Hercules, which is 12 themed short stories using the analogy of The Labours of Hercules from ancient Greek mythology and her, Hercule Poirot, undertaking 12 cases with symbolic significance. So the 12 stories were published, but this 13th one was in with her papers, and it had never been seen, to my knowledge, by anybody for the 60 years that Agatha Christie wrote it. Now, I think because of its subject matter, one of the main characters is an Austrian with the initials AH, with a small moustache, and he's making speeches which is rousing the youth of Europe to a frenzy. And she wrote this in 1939. So I think we can all work out why that wasn't published. So then I found a letter in an archive saying that to her from her agent, saying, I don't think The Strand, which is the famous magazine where Sherlock Holmes first appeared, I don't think they're going to publish this. So she said, well, send it back to me and I'll write another one. So this was the one that they sent back to her, and it was put on the shelf in Greenway House and probably stayed there for 60 odd years until one John Curran found it a few years ago. It's amazing.
It is. It's an amazing piece of history. It's an amazing piece of detective work that you have done on your own, John.
Well, I did feel a bit like Hercule Poirot when I was doing that.
Without a doubt. My guest is John Curran, author of the book, The Agatha Christie Secret Notebooks, 50 Years of Mysteries in the Making. And then, John, I'm going to ask you to comment on one of the more interesting or fascinating aspects of Agatha Christie's personal life. And that was her 11-day disappearance in 1926 that actually sparked a nationwide manhunt for us. Tell us about the story, and then speculate what you think happened during those 11 days.
Well, as you say, it was a huge story. I mean, I looked back at the papers of the time, and it was front page news for the 10 days in which she disappeared in all of the newspapers. What had happened was, prior to that, in 1926, firstly, her mother died, and she adored her mother, and vice versa, and this was a shock to her. So her mother died, and then she had to begin the process of emptying and selling up the family home, which was where she had grown up and which she loved. And then At the end of that year, her husband, whom she also adored, asked for a divorce because he was having an affair with somebody and he wanted to marry Nancy. So these three events coming one on top of the other, more or less, in the space of a few months, in my opinion, they caused what we would now call a nervous breakdown. They probably didn't have that phrase in 1926. So she left her house one Friday evening and disappeared, to all intents and purposes. She was found 10 days later living in a hotel in Harrogate, which is in the north of England in Yorkshire. A member of the staff of the hotel recognised her because her photo was in all the newspapers. So she never spoke about this ever for the rest of her life. And even when she did give an interview, which was very, very seldom, it was on condition that this was never mentioned. And she doesn't talk about it in her autobiography either. So I'm quite happy that it was just an intensely sad period in her life, and she had what we would now call a nervous breakdown. As you probably know, there has been endless speculation and films and books written to say that she was disappearing, hoping that her husband would be accused of doing something nefarious to her. But I think the fact that she was a mystery writer was what started that. If she had been just working in an office or a hospital or whatever, we wouldn't even be talking about it nowadays. But because a mystery writer disappears, it's manna from heaven to journalists. But I think that's, it's as simple as that.
Well, now, the bigger question that I have for you, John, is as you went through the 73 volumes of her notebooks, was there any clue, any indication, no, anything in there at all?
Absolutely nothing. But there, firstly, there's very little in the notebooks at all of a personal nature other than book lists or Christmas presents. But also the book that she did publish in 1926, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, there are no notes in the notebook for that, anywhere in the notebook for that book either. So there is no notebook from that time, is what that essentially says.
And does that indicate to you that perhaps there's a 74th notebook that nobody has discovered yet?
No, I would love to think that. But as I said earlier, the house, Greenway House, was emptied completely because it needed major renovation. So there was nothing left in the house by the time the renovators moved in, and I had moved out personally all of the papers that I found. So much as I would like to think there is another box of notebooks somewhere, I don't think so.
My guest has been John Kern, author of the book Agatha Christie's Secret Notebooks, 50 Years of Mysteries in the Making. John, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Agatha Christie's Secret Notebooks?
Well, what I intended when I wrote the book was to give people a deeper appreciation of Agatha Christie, because the books that we read and think are wonderful and very simple to read and therefore very simple to write, when you actually compare the notes in the notebook with the finished product, she worked jolly hard to produce them. So it's like a lot of things. It's the art that conceals art. She wrote, as I said, 80 titles over a period of 50 years, so she worked very hard. And I would like people, when they've finished either of the books, is to say, well, I now have a deeper appreciation of how this woman did what she did and did it so well for such a long time.
Well, no doubt that that is an insight into Agatha Christie. It's also an insight into the writing process, so anybody who's interested in being a writer would appreciate the flow, the hard work, the fairness, everything that went into her book. John, if people are intrigued by our discussion, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I have a website, johncurran.info, I-N-F-O, and Agatha Christie has a website, agathachristie.com or agathachristie.co.uk, which has up-to-date information on Agatha Christie and what's happening in the world of Agatha Christie.
That is
two best places.
That is great. John, thank you so much for being my special guest and taking some time out of your evening. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill.